I feel like I am in the worst storm possible. And so, like, the first time it happened a year ago, and he was like, hey, man, could you preach next week or the week after? I was like, see, the thing is, Sid, I'm not in the vein of God right now. And he's like, yeah, you'll be fine. Just suck it up and put your big boy pants on. You'll be in good shape. All right. And so I go, and this is like the fourth or fifth time straight that, like, Sid's called me. I've been like, really? Like, right now? This is the time that I'm supposed to be preaching? And so it didn't even bother me this time. I was like, it figures. This is the time that God wants me to preach. And I feel like part of it is, guys, preaching is just really sharing what God is doing in you. Okay? And so I don't think that there's, hopefully, a man or woman of God is not going to stand up here and be like, hey, you are living in sin that I have never been in before, and you need to get yourself cleaned up and get yourself right, but I'm good. Like, that's... I don't think anybody in this house that's ever held this microphone has felt that way. And so it's really, a lot of these things are things that God is poured into us as ministers, and He's doing that in our lives. And so I guess that's some of the reason that I get into these storms that I get into, and we all do, all right? We all have times where we think things are going well, and sometimes we think things are just really chaotic. And so, you know, obviously recently I've been in somewhat of a storm. Not that that's a bad thing, guys. Storms are not bad things, okay? Storms can deliver you into places that you're supposed to be in, okay? Because it kind of gets rid of the oars and the anchors and says, hey, this is where you're going. And then they put you in place. So storms aren't a bad thing, guys. It's okay to you know, there's several songs about, you know, keeping calm in the eye of the storm, and obviously several stories. And so storms aren't a bad thing. I'm kind of getting to the point into my life where I'm like, all right, here's another one. Let's see. Where are we going now? You know, what's going on? And so, so I just want to share with you guys just a little bit of not necessarily the details of my storm, because it doesn't matter. My storm is completely different than yours, and the chaos that's in my life is completely different than yours. And so I don't necessarily expect people to be able to empathize with certain situations. I know that everybody's problem is their problem, and that's the largest problem in the world to you right now is your problem. Some people, it could be that you broke your nail last week. Some people that, you know, obviously, we've got some storms in here. Your house could have burned down. I mean, so, you know, they vary. But I promise you, your problem is your problem to you. And it's big. And God cares about it. And there's things that I know about being in a storm that I learned. Okay, I learned these things at a young age. Like, I know when I'm in the middle of this that I'm supposed to... I'm being still. Being quiet. I know that that's what I'm supposed to do. I know I'm supposed to go, okay, peace, be still. Everything goes around, and you're just like, you seeing this? You know, and you're waiting on Him to kind of intervene. We know that's what we're supposed to do because we read it in the Word. The first time I really experienced that in my life was I was young. I was going through some stuff with my parents. Some of you guys know my story. Some of you don't. That's not important. But there was a time in my life when my parents were getting divorced, and then they obviously both left. I ended up living with the Lord. But before that whole part where they just kind of took off, they were in the, you know, I was told, hey, man, your parents are getting a divorce. Guys, that's not groundbreaking, earth-shattering things in today's world. Like, there are more kids that have divorced parents probably than have parents that are together. Okay, that's not ground chase. Not like, oh, my God, I feel so bad for that guy. You know, it happens. But in the middle of that, I was emotionally, I was distraught, you know, truth be told. There were several times as a teenage young man where manliness is important. And you cannot be seen vulnerable or other people will attack. You know, there were times I had to kind of find some place by myself and just cry by myself. And people walking like, you, I'm like, I'm fine, what's wrong with you? You know, it's like you, it happens, right? 17 years old and I'm squalling every couple of days. And you know, it's not healthy for anybody. And but I had been saved recently. I think God was like, here, I got to get you ready because you got a storm coming. So let me get you in the house. And so I was able to, I was saved and I had a good support system. I had people around me praying for me. And I knew, or I thought that I had known, that if there's a problem, that there's an answer in the book. And so after I had spent a couple of days or weeks, I don't know how long it was a long time ago. Obviously, I like the gin blossom, so it was a quite some time ago. I opened up my Bible, and this has happened to me once in my life, really, to where I opened up the Word to that page that I needed to. We all do that all the time. You know, if you haven't, you should try. You should buy it. All right, Jesus, what do you want me to read? And there it is. And this was like the one time I know that like God's came down from heaven and earmarked a page that I'd never read before. And he opened it up and I read Philippians 4:7. That's my verse, okay? Because when I was in what I felt like my formative years, my biggest storm was, I opened the Bible and it's not like I started reading chapter 4:1. And it's not like it was highlighted. I opened it and I read verse 4:7 and it says, "And the peace of God, which surpasses all understanding, will come upon you." Some way, shape, form, or fashion. I don't know if it was an NIV. But that's what it said. And in the middle of the snot, and I went, "Oh, thanks." And I can't explain it to you because it obviously says it passes understanding. I can't explain it. I just right there in my room as a teenager, just boom. Oh, well, God, that makes sense. I'm not supposed to be okay, but I am. Good. And that doesn't mean that I didn't have like issues about it and that I didn't resent and have bitterness. Those are all things I had to tackle as life wore on. But right then and there, God said, "Peace, be still. Okay? I got you. It doesn't make sense. You have no clue where your next meal is coming from, but I got you. You know, I'm going to take care of you." And so I know from experience that God is going to take care of me. I have that experience that says no matter what the storm is, God is going to take care of me. And so when I get into these storms, what I should do is exactly that. What I should do is go, "All right, God, you got some platform you're raising or something. This is going to be exciting. Here you go again. Let's do this together." That's what I should do because I have learned from it. But I don't do that a lot, okay? Because as I've gotten older, I'm pretty smart and I can do things on my own. And God, I'll leave the big stuff to you. I'll handle this minute stuff for you and you're welcome. And we do that, especially as men. I don't know if women do it as much, but I know I do it. Like, well, I can handle this financial situation and I can handle this by talking to this person and Google is a wonderful tool. And thank you for that, Jesus. And I will Google the best way in there out an avenue to get through this particular issue. You go worry about feeding the starving kids and I will take care of this. And that is not at all what God has told us to do. He is omnipotent, He is omnipresent, He is all-knowing, He is all-powerful, He is all-seeing. He knows exactly where you need to go, yet we go, "No, thank you. I have experience now, Jesus, and I am older and I am wiser, and I don't need to trust in you as much because you've given me ability, and I trust in that." And we do it all the time. I trust in my ability to reason and to logic. I feel like the older I've gotten, I am so much smarter than you, India. You don't even know because you don't have life experience, and you're young. And let me tell you how to do things because I have done them before. And that's a good thing for me to pour into her, but it's a bad thing for me to think that my ways are better. Because he clearly says in the Bible, his ways are higher than our ways and his thoughts are higher than our thoughts. Yet, we continually say, "No, I got this." And so, in this most recent storm, that's how I started out. And instead of being still and quiet, which is mentioned over 25 times in the Bible, Old and New Testament, doesn't matter which one you like the most, it's in both of them. He says, "Quiet, peace, be still, hey, be still, hey, be quiet, hey, be still and know." And he says it all the time. But instead of being still and quiet, I'm like, "Hey, I need to talk to some people. Hey, what can you tell me about this?" And I complain and I verbalize things and I'm very active and I'm like, "Well, if I can do this and if I can do this and I can do this, I can put a stop to this." And you can't. That river, that ocean, that storm's going to take you where it's going to take you. And all you're doing is wasting energy and wasting time and wasting resources by trying to pull an oar up and be like, "I'll steady this, Jesus, thank you." That's not what he's wanting you to do. He's wanting you to dump the oars overboard and go, "Let's see where we're heading." You know, I think Robin gave my wife a word about that, and we talked about it last night in the car, about just get some floats and float down the river, because that's kind of what it's like with God. You know, don't try to steady the boat because he's got it, you know. And right in the middle of all the chaos, and we know the stories in the New Testament where, you know, the disciples, they're on the boat and here comes the storm and everybody's freaking out and he's sleeping, right? And he has to wake up and be like, "All right, peace, be still, storm." He tells the storm to be still. He's like, "Guys, what's the problem?" You know, we see that and we know because from experience, that's what we are supposed to do, is to sit and be still. Yet, here's the difference between the situations. There are situations to where we go, "God, take care of us. I don't know what I'm doing." And those are the situations which we don't think that we can handle on our own. Only in those situations do we truly go, I'm at a loss, God, help me. But when we think we can handle it, no, God, you can pass on this one. And so that's kind of where I've been a little bit lately. And so, the reason that I know those things is because I've been through some things. I've been through some issues, and I've seen God work in my life. And so I know that He works. It's based upon my experience. Just kind of reading through my notes. The older I've gotten and the more knowledgeable I've gotten, I don't want to write something down and not get that out to you guys, because I always leave. If you've ever preached or shared anything, you leave and you go, "Ah, I forgot to say that, and I should have said that," so I don't want to do that anymore. It says, what should I do? I should have peace. I should be still. I should be quiet and listen, not talk. I shouldn't be research. I use Google. Y'all know me. I'm always looking stuff up as far as like you don't even have to go to college anymore sometimes, guys. Have you seen YouTube? Oh, my gracious. Like, how to change a carburetor. And hey, okay, hold on. Pause. Rewind 5 seconds. What do you do? Okay. You can do anything with YouTube now. Like, if you know how to get... What's sad is, like, so many of my high school kids, they can't even use Google correctly. Like there's times when I kind of walk away and I'm like, just kind of find the answer on your own, because I want them to get it. Like, I don't want, go ahead and cheat. Go ahead and get this answer. They can't even do it. It's like, I don't know what to do. Try Google. It's your friend. Like, we didn't have that in school. We had the card catalog system that had the giant, like, and then you had and someone always put a card in the wrong spot, and you guys have Google. You can get through college with Google. Like, I did it. I was that tweener generation. It came out, like, after I got out of high school and I was in college. I was like, wow. I'm going to have to sit in class. Don't do that. You should just learn the things. But anyways, I do that a lot. Any problem that I have, I'm like, let's just ask Google. What if we treated Jesus like we treat, use Google? Oh, man. Ouch. It got me first, okay? So I'm not throwing that at your shin. It got me first. What if we use Jesus like we use? What if we used the Bible, right, like we use our reference materials? I bet we would find some answers that might suffice us better than worldly answers. And so God kind of chapped me on that pretty good over the last month or so. And so I started asking myself, how come I couldn't have done this the easy way? Like, how come the first time I couldn't have just done this and seen this thing coming from afar, identified it, known what it was, and then enacted the plan that God wants me to enact? How come I couldn't do that? And the reason why is because I had not learned effectively what I'm supposed to do in this storm. And there are several different types of ways to learn. We've read things. I'm kind of a visual. Raise your hand if you're a visual learner. You think you're a visual learner. You need to see things, right? Sometimes words on a page kind of run together and you need to see, like YouTube, right? And you need to see things done. So why can't I know or learn these things before they happen was kind of the question that I had asked myself. And the reason why I haven't learned these things, as a teacher, I'm going to say, if you're a teacher in here, I'm probably going to make you mad this morning, because I'm going to talk about those learning theories for just a quick second, and you're going to want to stab me in the throat, because there's some point in time everybody in here had to write like 83 pages about learning theories just for fun, and that's not fun. But I got to wonder, like, how do we learn? What does it take for us to learn things? And the two, and you guys can correct me if I'm wrong, the two things that I think help you learn more than anything, number one is experience. When you actually experience this event, you tend to learn it. You know, it's like a kid putting your hand on the stove. It's pretty hot. Not doing that again, right? You learn those things from experience, like wear shoes while you ride a bicycle, okay? So you learn those things the hard way. There's scars involved. Experience is the first way. The second way that every last one of us learn from, that we don't know what to call it because we didn't go to school to be teachers, is the social learning theory. We learn things socially. We don't learn, very rarely do we just open up a book and read a book and have just every parameter and dimension of this thing. You have to learn things together. You learn them. So right now you are receiving direct instruction, right? That's a nice way of lecture, right? We have to use that. We can't say lecture anymore. It's direct instruction. And so you're receiving a social interaction with a human being, and you're receiving direct. The best way to learn is when we're sitting in small groups, right? and we're conversing about what's happened during the day, and that's the new thing. We break children into small groups and we put them together, and what's that? The differentiation of the groups. Yes, that's the word that we hate to use too. Differentiation, and we jigsaw method our lessons, and we do all these things because we have found out that people learn better socially. When me talking, you'll learn some. But when you get to talk back and we're exchanging, then you're going to learn a little bit more. And then when you get to see whatever it is that you're supposed to learn in action, then you're going to learn a little bit more. And so that is the best way for us to learn how to do things. So again, I ask, how come I have not seen these things? And how come I wasn't ready for my latest storm that was attacking me? And so the hard part of this, I'm going to get to in just a second. I decided to use some more examples because I wrote them in my notes. This is how I can prove to you that. Does anybody remember PEMDAS? Right? Okay. Kids in the back are like, yes. How about please excuse my dear aunt? Who's a Sally and who's a Sue? I was a Sue guy. Please excuse my dear aunt Sue. Thank you. So I'm a bald guy. You learn that socially, either because your teacher said that to you, or you had to sing the song, or you had to repeat it back. You had to engage to learn those things, and that's kind of what we're talking about. So again, why don't I learn things? Why have I not seen these things before? And the answer is came to me in very simple terms. I felt like God wanted to teach us this morning. It's very simple: is discipleship is failing. Thank you. One person was not too terribly offended. Discipleship's failing. We have one job, like the very first job that Jesus gives us, and I'm going to get some scripture, Matthew 28 in a minute. The one job we have is to disciple. Go forth and make disciples. Says it quite a few times. One point where we're going to dive in and say that, but discipleship is failing. Because if discipleship was working, I would have seen in another already. I would have seen an example. I would have socially interacted with someone and been able to say, hey, I remember when Scott went through that and I watched this happen, so I know this happens next, and this is the posture I should take with God and with the world, and these are the things that I should do. Thank you for giving me a blueprint. We're failing. I saw a friend of mine shared something on Facebook this week. And he shared one of his life lessons that he gives in the classroom, which I love to do all the time. U.S. history is great, but I love to be able to stop and talk about self-discipline and all kind of stuff like that. And he shared this billboard analogy. You're a billboard. You're a walking, talking billboard. What's yours say? Okay, what does yours say? You know, and if the first thing does not scream, I am a believer, we're failing. If the first thing that my walking, talking billboard is wrestling, I'm failing. Okay, I'm failing at that, all right? Because the first thing that I have to be is a believer. The first thing I have to be is someone that has a relationship with God. Everything else becomes secondary. So if that's the case, and we say it all the time. We say all the time. If you listed, especially we did this in athletics my entire life, you list your priorities in order. And every coach has always said, well, God's got to be first, right? And then your family's second. And then this team is third. And then everything else comes after that. And we say that all the time, but how many of us actually do that? If you were to divide your time, your heart, your resources, is God really the largest chunk of it? Probably not for me lately. Okay, I'm not throwing fastballs at your shins this morning that hadn't already got me. Right? And so if we are a walking, talking billboard, what does it say? Okay, what does it say? Matthew 28:16 gives us a very, very, very easy to understand commandment. We always call this the Great Commission. Anybody heard that? Has anybody not heard the term the Great Commission? We've all heard it. Smart India, what does commission mean? Give me a definition for commission. Find Google. Use your Google. No, it's okay. I do that in class too. I asked them, I was like, is your Google broke? Here is a definition. I actually wrote one down last night. I'll get it. You ain't got to worry about it. I got it. The word commission, definition, instruction, command, or duty. Why do we look at this like it's optional? Why do we look at the Great Commission like it's an option? Because it didn't, we called it a commission, not a commandment. I guess that word's not, you know, we don't kill people. That one's important, right? Here is the commandment that Jesus gave us. It's in red letters in most of your Bibles. It's titled the Great Commission, but what it really says is this is your job. And the very first part of the Great Commission says this: I have been given all authority in heaven and earth. You might want to listen up. I'm pretty important. What I'm about to say goes for the big guns upstairs too, so you should listen. And he says, therefore go and make disciples. Stop. We won't read anymore. Therefore go and make disciples. When here I know that I've taught before on what is a disciple. A disciple is a follower, a believer, someone that imitates those that lead them. So therefore go and make disciples. The problem is we haven't made ourselves one. Because if I was a disciple, someone who follows Jesus, who walks and talks and speaks and commands and listens and is still and is quiet like Jesus. Have you not heard the term before? We're supposed to be Jesus with skin on, right? I'm just supposed to be the Nick version of Jesus and try to screw up at least amount as possible. We fail in that every day. His glory is enough. Thank you, God, for mercy and grace, because I fail on a daily basis. But if we truly are, right, Jesus with skin on, then I ought to be able to go through whatever I'm going through, and my kids go, okay, got that. When I'm 35 and this happens to me, seen Dad go through it. So, like, I know that we're really supposed to press in and pray, and that we're supposed to offer things up to God, and that we're supposed to do these. I've seen it before. And so if I'm truly Jesus, I'm discipling my family. If I'm truly Jesus, I'm discipling those in my sphere of influence around me. Go forth and make disciples. Jesus tells us to go make disciples. We know what disciples are. Making a disciple is hard. It's not an easy, like, hey, he says he believes in Jesus, he is now a disciple, go forth and make other disciples. How many disciples did Jesus have? Okay, I'm going to go with a small amount. I'm not going to just say he had 12. But he had a small amount. Okay, a small amount. This is Jesus. I have been granted authority, all authority in heaven. That guy had a very small amount. That guy had a very small amount of disciples. And he made disciples over this 3-year, whatever, give or take, ministry that Jesus opened. So he makes these disciples. How does he make disciples? Well, I need to learn by experiencing God here and looking and reading and all these things. He makes disciples over these 3 years. It takes him 3 years to make people that wrote the Bible. He didn't have 1,000 disciples. He sent the 5,000 away, right? So he could spend some time with his group, his inner circle, because he knows, like we do now in our infinite wisdom and education, that you need small groups to really get stuff inside of people. You need eye contact, and you need explanations, and you need dinners, and you like the campfire. You know, Jesus spent time by a campfire just talking to these guys. And it took him a long time to make these disciples. And so right now, me talking to you guys, there's no way I could disciple everyone in this room right now. Okay, I can teach, right? I might even can preach. I could do some. But there's no possible way that we all can sit down right now and have an intimate setting, an intimate closed conversation. This is like the big party. Everybody's been to a party at some point in time. If you haven't, God bless you. But you go to a party, good party, bad party, doesn't really matter. If there's more than 20 people there, you don't know what happened. Like, you wake up the next day and you call your buddy and they're like, hey, dude, did you see what happened to so-and-so? And you're like, no. And then they tell you the story. You were in the same place, but you didn't see it happen because it was a big party. Right, you missed a lot of things. But if there's a quiet gathering of 10 people, 5 people, we're making dinner together, everybody is going to see everything. Everybody is going to witness everything. Everybody's going to be able to verbalize and speak and tell the story of the things that happened the night before, because we were all together in a quiet and intimate setting. What God is saying is, who is in your quiet and intimate setting? If we're supposed to make disciples, are you trying to do this with 20 people or zero? Some of us may not have anybody in our inner circle right now. I've been there before, guys, and I didn't want them there either. Like, that was a choice I made. I said, nah, I need some me time right now. I'm important. I need to minister. And there are times where you need to take and spend some time discipling yourself. And then there's times where it's easier to stand behind a microphone and talk to 60 people and say, hey, this is what you should do with your life. Go forth and be merry. Like, it's easy to do. Like, sometimes it's just easier to say that and get out of here. What's hard, it's hard to disciple people, guys. It takes part of you. It takes time. It takes effort. It takes prayer. It takes letting someone get into a piece of this. It takes becoming vulnerable. Jesus was vulnerable to the disciples. I mean, he slept right beside them. Obviously, he was extremely vulnerable. One of them turned him in. Okay? Some of us are afraid of getting turned in. But maybe getting turned in is going to ultimately release, right, what God has for us to do. Maybe getting turned in and walking that walk and taking all those things is exactly what God has asked you to do, because it's going to mean freedom for thousands. Freedom. That. Thank you, Jesus. Thank you. Woo, you just gave me that. Maybe you walking that walk up that hill is going to create freedom for thousands. So welcome the vulnerability. Get comfortable living in unknown and uncharted places, because that, you think the, you know, Jamie said this yesterday. We get this thing right here and we get to read it and go, oh, well, let me find what the Bible says about peace or love. Or they didn't have that. Matthew, Mark, Luke, they didn't have that. They had the Old Testament, which said, hey, go sacrifice some lambs and then we'll be in good shape. They didn't have peace be still. They didn't have all these things that we have. They didn't have the instruction booklet that we had. All they had was the words from Jesus. That's really all you need to make disciples. If you're spending time with the Father, if you're spending time with the Son, if you are spending time with the one that we're supposed to spend time with, He's going to drip off of you. He's going to be all, so on you so much that you can't interact with someone and them not go, I feel like I perceive this as a man of God. You know, there's going to be an impossible. They'll be able to look at your face and go, something's different about this cat. And it all comes from spending time with the Lord. And the Lord has told us to go forth and make disciples. How do you make disciples? You become vulnerable to people. The disciples saw Jesus. They saw Him down. They saw Him sad. They saw Him mad. They saw Him happy. They saw every situation that we've read about it. They witnessed Him in that situation. My children are going to be the closest thing. Your children are the closest thing you have to your disciples, because they saw you handle every situation. And some of you, like me, are going, God, please don't let them tell anybody how I handled that. Holy Jesus, let's just know I was good, I was patient, I was kind, and I was gentle, and I was long-suffering. But your children are your disciples. They're going to act like you act. They're going to say the things you say. They're going to do the things that you do until they turn 14, and then they'll hate you for 3 years and say, I'm never going to be like my dad. And then like 10 years later, they're exactly like their dad. But whatever. Your disciple is going to make you, you've got to spend some time. You've got to be close with these guys. And so they were able to see all of those things. And this is something that I wrote, and I want to share it with you guys. It says, if we are able to make disciples, we need to focus on a small group that He has placed in our lives. We must introduce experiences for them. We must show them how Christ is in our lives with all situations. If we're going to make disciples, we need to focus on a small group of people He has placed in our lives, these people that He's placed in our lives, and we must introduce experiences for them. I have got to introduce experiences for my children with God. It is my job to introduce that. If the two ways that we learn are through experience and through social learning, I've got to give my children experiences. I can't be the helicopter dad that's always moving. I got to let him experience getting that toe caught up in the bike the first time, right? Okay? That's got to happen. That sounds cruel and unusual, but it's got to happen, okay? It's got to happen. I've got to introduce experiences for people. If you consider yourself a man or woman in God, and you look at the things that you've done over the last 15, 20 years of your walk, or 5 years of your walk, those things happen based upon experiences. You had experiences that put you where you are now. Because of my parents' issue, I now am able to minister to kids that have that issue. And because of this, I'm able to do this. Because of those things, I'm able to do this, and so on and so forth. How do you expect to make a disciple if they don't have any experiences? We've got to introduce it. I'm not going to lie, I got really frustrated. Can I be honest with y'all? Some of y'all going to hate me. It don't matter if you do. It's fine. After we got to talk, like, and then Robin tried to save me later on. She was like, hey guys, no, really, seriously, it's okay to worship. I'm not going to lie, I got a little bit, like, I didn't get angry, but I was perturbed, might be the word, because, like, sometimes I want to be like, hey, is there a reason that we can't, like, mosh pit up in the front together? Like, I don't get it. Like, it's okay to be close to other people and just wedge up in there and be like, I'm sorry, I was jumping too. Have you ever been to like a worship conference when there's thousands or hundreds of people, like going as a youth to like a concert, and it's a Christian concert, even though it's not really worship, they're playing music and you're there and you're happy and you're dancing up. When's the last time you provided that experience for someone? Maybe that's an experience that our youth need. Maybe that's an experience that you need. Okay? And so, I'm sorry, guys. You're not going to come in here and the best artists in the world are never going to play on that stage. That's more than likely not going to happen. No offense. You're good, dude. Like, you're really good. And that's not a knock on you at all. But we bring you down. All right? How about that? That's not going to happen. You know, Neil Peart is not coming to play the drums next Sunday for us. Okay? Huh? Yeah, no, he's not playing bass either. But what is going to happen next Sunday is God's going to be here. And He's going to answer the calls of His people, and He's going to inhabit the praise of it. It says that again in here. It says He inhabits the praise of His people. Do you really want Him to inhabit this place? Give Him a little bit of praise. Okay? And I'm not saying that the level of your praise directly dictates the level of His presence, but the level of your praise directly dictates the level of His presence sometimes. It does. You know, again, Rennie Curran said yesterday, don't tell me you want to achieve your dream and you're sitting in there playing video games and not working out. That's a lie, okay? Your mouth says something, your actions do something else, okay? And so, it's okay to physically, we do things physically, guys. It is okay to physically give your body to God. He said He wants all of you. He wants your head, He wants your heart, and He wants your body too, okay? It is okay to physically say, hey, God, here I am this morning. My knees are hurting, okay? My knees are hurting, but here I am, and I might not can jump up and down, but I'll sway a little bit, okay? There you go, all right? It's okay to let loose and let God. That's all right? That's okay. So again, I think for the third time today, I want to loose you guys to experience God and worship in a different way than you ever have before. Okay? I want to loose myself to experience God in a different way and worship than I ever have before. Okay? I love Georgia football. Okay? And still, as an old guy, if I go to a game this year, and it's third down and it's a big play in the game, I'm going to be the guy that stands up and you might not like me and I'm like, oh, I'm going to be that guy. Okay, I'm going to try to make noise, and I'll be clapping, and I'm going to look at you if you're not doing it. I'm going to be mad at you. I'm going to be like, why are you here? You ain't helping nobody. Get up. You know, like, that's me. That's who I... If I can do that and make myself look like an idiot in front of 93,000 people in Athens, how come I can't walk up in here and be like, oh! Okay, there's nothing wrong with that, guys. I remember Damon told a story one time. He was doing a revival down in New Orleans, Louisiana. And which, if you've been there, it's a different place, right? It's a different place, but he's preaching this revival, and this row of kids come in with their shirts off and, like, letters painted on their body. I think it was, it was Judah, as a matter of fact. I said it was Judah, it was my son's name, Judah. And so they came in with that painted across their chest. Not telling you guys to do that, but, like, I'm not going to be upset if I see that. I'm not going to be like, welp, here we go. If that's what God says He wants from you, give it to Him. Okay? If God says He wants you to come lay down on your face in this floor, then give it to Him. Okay? If He says that, hey man, I've got something. I remember sitting in a chair right about there, God, a long time ago now, over 20 years ago, and not remembering anything that was said in this place. I have no clue what was said. I just know that at the end time, when the lights came on and the music came up, I felt like if I didn't stand up and do this, that something bad was going to happen to me. Like if I didn't just stand up and take a step that way. So I had to make a physical decision, right, to uproot myself and do this. And then I felt like the rest of the way I just glided like I was on a cloud, and like it was almost like an instantaneous transportation from there to here. And I found myself on my face. I had never been to church before. I didn't know what to do, and I found myself crying uncontrollably and asking God to come live in me because I'm messed up and I need You, and I know that above everything else right now, I got to get right with You. And it took a physical declaration from me to do that. Okay? Whether you get saved in here, I heard about a guy getting saved in his bed. He was on a top bunk. He was a teenager. And he said in the middle of the night, God spoke to him. And he said, I've got to wake up and get on my knees. And he got up and he got on his knees. It took a physical declaration to say, God, here I am, all of me, my heart, my mind, here I am. So let's start giving God our physical presence as well. All right? And if you want to make disciples and you want to teach people how to worship, you got to do it yourself. You can't command. This is not do as I say, not do as I do. That doesn't work. Children see right through that. Young Christians see right through that. And they will say, this doesn't work. This guy's fake. And so if you want to stop storms from eating people up, if you want to stop bad things from just devouring Christians, if you want to stop these things from happening, all you have to do is start living the way that God intended us to live, and that is to make disciples, to wear our Jesus-colored skins and capes and make disciples. It doesn't get any easier, guys. It is a commandment. Stop treating it like it is an option. Okay? This is not an option. It's not an option. Okay? This morning, Victor, it's not an option for you to not go make disciples, visitor or not. You know, that's your job. If you are a believer, that's what Jesus says, go make disciples. Now we've talked about how to make disciples. We've got to give them experiences, and we've got to socially learn. It needs to be in a small group. We need to get with people, and we need to pour into them because people are resources, they are important, and without that, the rest of this stuff is worthless. If you're not willing to become vulnerable in the midst of someone else, if you're not willing to open yourself and your home and your heart and your mind to someone else, you're not willing to do it for God. You will not grow. You will not grow spiritually. You will not grow as an adult. You will not grow as a human being unless you open yourself up to others. Because if you can't open yourself up to a brother or sister, you're not going to be able to open yourself up to God. Because if you're worried about a brother or sister hurting you, God's going to get in there and He's going to root that stuff around that you don't want to talk about, okay? If you're not willing to open up and get in on that, you're scared to let God in. Why? Guys, we're dirty and nasty people, okay? So I guess the biggest thing I would love to do in this church this morning is let you know we all know it. Busted, okay? Sorry, we know it. I get it. I try to. I even wore a button-down shirt and black shoes today for y'all. I don't ever do that. I'm a tennis shoe guy. And so I think that my black shoes